be there to support me. I've made up my mind. I'm going back home. I won't tell the police where I spent the night. It will get Nick in trouble. I'll say I slept in my car. They won't care, as long as they find me. I thought I would feel sick at the idea of facing the police and maybe going to jail. But strangely enough, it feels like a great weight off my shoulders. I don't want to run away. I want to tell everybody what I did and why I did it. Derek deserved it. He was a horrible person, a monster. If I hadn't killed him, he would have killed me. I look out the window. The area around the motel appears to be cleared away. I can leave now, finally. I grab my bag and exit my room one last time. As I lock the door behind me, I see that room 202 has cracked open again. Greta is watching me leave. But as soon as I turn to look at her, she shuts the door tight. "Bye, Greta," I say. The stairs creak threateningly as I make my way down to the first floor. My bag strap bites into my shoulder. I consider leaving it in the lobby while I bring the car around, but Nick isn't down here, and I don't want to leave it unattended. The ceiling is still leaking, the same way it was when I came in. Why does the water look so red? I still don't get it. But it's none of my concern. I drop my keys on the desk. I push the door open to escape the motel. The cold air hits me in the face, but at least it's not snowing. I forgot to zip up my coat, and the wind slips between the folds of my open jacket. At least the road should be clear by now, especially once I get on the highway. I should be home in 2 hours. And then I'll turn myself in. As I rifle through my purse looking for my keys, I hear footsteps. I look up and see a figure approaching me. It's so dark here, it's hard to see who it is. I squint out into the blackness. "Hello?" I say. A raspy voice spits out, "How could you do that?" And then a second later, the knife buries itself in my abdomen between the open folds of my coat. I stare at it for a moment, watching the crimson stain spread across my shirt. And then everything goes black. Chapter 16. Claudia. One day earlier. Every time I ask Deputy Scott Dwyer a question, he has one of three answers. "I don't know." "I can't say." "Why don't you go home and I'll call you when we know something?" I find the third one especially maddening. If your baby sister were missing after her husband was found in a pool of blood in their kitchen, would you just go home and chill until the incompetent deputy got his head out of his ass? No, I didn't think so. Unfortunately, the police chief is out of town on vacation and won't be back until Monday. God knows how badly Scotty will muck everything up by then.
"Mrs. Delaney," Scotty says to me as we stand in the freezing rain outside my sister's house. His freckles have faded from when he was in high school, and he's bulked up enough to fill out his blue uniform. He used to be passably cute when Quinn was dating him, but now he's grown into someone the housewives love to ogle.
"You should go home. We're handling this."
"Handling this?" I stare at him. "The same way you handled it when you came here a few hours ago after getting a call from a neighbor that they heard screaming. And instead of looking inside the house, you just walked away. Handle it kind of like that?" Scotty's cheeks are pink. It could be because of the cold, but it could also be because he knows he royally screwed up. He was here. He was at this house when my sister was still here and possibly in terrible danger. And he didn't even check it out. I was the one who discovered the body in the kitchen. It was much later. Too late. I knew something was wrong when I spoke to her on the phone."
"She looked fine when she came to the door," he says. She said the neighbor just heard a movie.
I don't even know what to say to that. My sister opened the door for the police officer, and God knows if there was somebody pointing a gun at her head while she gave all the right answers. If Scott had only stepped inside.
You're sure you don't know who those messages were from?
Scott asks. If I did, don't you think I would tell you? I snap at him. That's yet another piece in the puzzle. Besides Derek's iPhone, he also had a burner phone in his pocket. Scott claimed that just prior to his death, he was texting with another woman, planning to meet her for a rendezvous at his house while he believed Quinn to be at work.
She could be a witness,
Scott points out. Or she could have killed my sister. I glare at him. You're examining that possibility, aren't you?
Of course,
he says.
We're examining every possibility.
There is one thing on Quinn's side here, and that's the fact that I'm pretty sure Scott is still in love with her. It's been a decade since they dated in high school, but he still hasn't gotten married. Doesn't even have a serious girlfriend, from what I've heard. I remember the year after Quinn left for college, Scotty looked like a sad puppy dog every time I saw him. I stopped going into his father's store because every time I did, he would be there, sweeping the floor or working the cash register, and he would ask me about Quinn in that hopeful voice. He was almost obsessed with her. Another officer is calling to Scott from inside the house. He glances behind him, then back at me. He tries to blink away the frozen raindrops on his pale eyelashes.
I've got to go, Claudia.
You'll call me if you find out anything?
I will. I promise.
He pauses. I'm sure it's a lie.
And you'll call me if you hear from Quinn?
Of course, I say. But that's also a lie. As he walks away, I reach into my purse and pull out my phone for the 100th time. I select Quinn's number from my favorites list. I let it ring. And ring. And ring. Pick up, damn it. Please, Quinn, it's me. It's your sister. Hi, you've reached Quinn's phone. Please leave a message at the beep. I grit my teeth. I didn't expect her to answer, but I'd been hoping. I'm not sure if she even has her phone anymore. If she had it, she would have picked up by now. Even so, I leave another message. Quinn, it's Claudia. I grip my phone tighter with my freezing hand. Please call me back if you get this. Please. Whatever happened, we're going to figure it out. I promise you. Just call me back. I love you. I hang up the phone. I stare down at the screen, willing it to ring. But of course it doesn't. Right now, Quinn's husband is dead. Murdered. Quinn is gone, and so is her car. In my mind, there are two possibilities. The first is that whoever killed Derek also did something to Quinn. When Scotty showed up at her house, there was somebody hiding behind the door with a gun, ready to shoot her if she said the wrong words. And she's currently tied up in a trunk or in some underground dungeon without access to her phone. The second possibility is that Quinn is the one who killed Derek. It's hard to imagine the second possibility. No, Quinn and Derek did not have an ideal marriage. She complained about him a lot, to the point where I wasn't sure why she stuck around. But my sister isn't the murdering type. Even when she was a teenager, she couldn't even bear to smash a beetle she found crawling in her bed. She would make me capture it and set it free. Hell, she didn't even like throwing the ball at people during dodgeball when we were kids. I can't picture her stabbing her own husband in cold blood and leaving him bleeding to death in the middle of her kitchen. The same kitchen she and I spent hours flipping through magazines together in our attempt to make it into the perfect kitchen. She wouldn't. She couldn't. Maybe Quinn wasn't that crazy about Derek, but she had a good life. The idea that she would stab him to death? I just can't imagine it. So, by process of elimination, That means she's being held captive somewhere. And we've got to find her. I'm going to find you, Quinn. I triple-dipper promise with a cherry on top. My phone rings and my heart leaps. But then I pull it out of my purse and my face falls when I see the name on the screen. Rob. I jab at the green button to answer the call.
Claudia.
His voice is tight.
Are you coming home?
I glance over at Scott, who is lingering in the entranceway of the Alexander household. Not yet.
The police are handling it. You should come home.
Everyone here is incompetent.
Claudia, you're a masseuse. Can you please leave this to the police?
I may be a masseuse, but I was majoring in criminal justice in college. I might have gone to law school if I had finished. If my parents hadn't lost control of their car that afternoon at the end of my freshman year. I want to find my sister, I insist. I'm not going to sit around and let the police screw this up any more than they already have. At first, I think Rob is going to say something insensitive, but then he redeems himself by instead saying,
Do you want me to meet you over there?
No, it's fine.
It's not fine, Claudia. The rain is coming down hard, and it's turning to snow. All you've got is the Chevy. If you're going to stay, at least let me pick you up in my truck.
Rob and I have been married for almost 6 years now. Things have gotten kind of stale between us lately, and he's always working, always running out to unclog a toilet somewhere. Sometimes I think Rob and I don't care much for each other anymore. But then he goes and says something like that. I glance up at my sister's house. The doorstep is slick with ice. Rob is right. It's really coming down. I see the outline of Scott Dwyer in the window. He's talking to another officer, and it seems to me he is far too calm considering he's investigating a murder. I still can't figure out what he was thinking. He heard screaming coming from my sister's house. Why didn't he go inside and investigate? What kind of police officer doesn't investigate screaming? It's strange. But either way, there's nothing we can do about it now. Fine, I say. I'll come home. Chapter 17. Rob isn't a wealthy entrepreneur like Derek, so our house is much more modest than the one I just came from. Two stories, three bedrooms, two of which aren't much bigger than Quinn's walk-in closet. It was a fixer-upper when we bought it 3 years ago, and we haven't entirely fixed it up. The outside still needs a good coat of paint. The porch is still unfinished, and 6 months ago, I put my foot right through a floorboard. Rob is handy. And he always swears he's in the middle of fixing it all. Every Sunday, he gets out his tool belt and acts like he's doing something important. But meanwhile, the front of our house still looks like something out of a gothic horror novel. I'm dripping wet when I walk into the house through the garage entrance. Standing in the freezing rain for hours will do that to you. But on the drive home, the rain turned into snow. Rob was right. The roads became incredibly slippery, and I had to focus all my attention on getting home safely. When I get into the living room, I'm pleased to find that Rob has cranked the heat way up. Usually it annoys me when he does that, but now I'm grateful for it. Rob is sitting on our second-hand sofa, reading the newspaper, although it's probably just the sports page. He might be the only person under the age of 50 who still reads a paper newspaper. And he isn't even 40 yet, although he could easily pass for 10 years older since he started losing his hair a few years ago. When he sees me, he tosses the newspaper aside, his fingers coated in a layer of ink. Rob's fingers are always either covered in ink from the paper or covered in grime from his job. I feel like I need to hose him down before he can kiss me hello.
So, what's going on?
He asks,
Do the police have any leads?
I swallow a lump in my throat. They're trying to trace her phone, but somehow they can't do it. Something about the weather. They said this storm is messing everything up. Rob's brow crinkles.
How are you doing?
I take a shaky breath, shivering under my damp clothing. I can't believe this is all happening. I only just spoke to her this afternoon. I knew something was wrong. Knew it better than the damn cop. He comes over to me and massages my shoulder. I let him do it for a second, but then I jerk away when I remember his ink-stained fingers. Can you wash your hands, please? I say. Rob blinks at me. For a moment, I think this is going to be the start of another fight. But then he goes over to the sink and washes his hands. He soaps them up and everything. He's on his best behavior.
Good thing you went over there to check on her,
he says as he rinses off the black-tinged soap. Yeah, I murmur. When I close my eyes, I can still see the scene that greeted me when I stepped into the Alexander household hours earlier. I shudder. I'll never forget it for as long as I live.
Claudia?
I open my eyes. Rob has finished washing his hands and is staring at me.
Are you okay?
I shiver, and I'm not sure if it's from the cold. Maybe I'll go upstairs and take a shower. Is the hot water working? He nods.
Should be.
Part of me wishes I had stayed at the crime scene. Maybe I'm just a masseuse, but nobody knows my sister like I do. If anyone could find her, it's me. But Scotty promised to call me if they find any new information. I'm terrified the new information will be finding Quinn in a ditch somewhere. I don't know how I'm going to sleep tonight. I climb the stairs to the master bedroom, the only one of our three bedrooms that isn't pint-sized. When we bought the house, we imagined the other two bedrooms would be for our kids. But no kids have come along yet. So right now we've got two guest rooms. Not that we get many guests. I told Quinn if she ever left Derek, she could have her pick. The bed is still made from this morning with the green floral printed bedspread. I make the bed every day after I wake up in the morning. Even though nobody sees our bedroom besides me and Rob, my mother always made us make our beds, and I can't leave the bedroom with the bed still unmade. I just can't. And I would die of shock if Rob ever made the bed. While I'm stripping off my wet clothing, my phone rings. Again, my heart leaps, hoping it's some sort of news about the case or maybe Quinn herself calling. But instead, the name on the screen is Lori Marshall. I only have Lori's phone number programmed into my phone because I gave her a massage a few times. But I stopped taking her calls after Quinn told me she was pretty sure Lori was having an affair with Derek. She's exactly his type. Blonde, with legs longer than the Empire State Building. He loves blondes. That's why Quinn started coloring her hair. Why would Lori be calling now? I consider letting it go to voicemail, but curiosity gets the better of me, so I answer the phone. Lori?
Hi, Claudia.
I can tell from the hushed tone of her voice that she knows what happened. I didn't see any reporters around, so I assume it isn't on the news yet, but it must have spread through word of mouth.
I heard the news. Is it true?
Is what true? I ask dryly.
You know, about...
Her voice breaks.
Derek. That he's been... killed.
I consider denying the whole thing, but she'll know the truth soon enough. Yes, it's true. Lori lets out a strangled sob.
Oh, how awful. How could Quinn do something like that?
Excuse me, I hiss into the phone, but my sister is missing and I don't appreciate your assumptions.
Your sister killed her husband, then ran away. What other conclusion can you draw?
You know, I lower myself onto my bed. The police have a reason to suspect Derek was meeting another woman this afternoon.
He was?
That's right. I clear my throat. Tell me, Lori, Are you still sleeping with Derek? Claudia, what are you saying?
I think you know what I'm saying.
Well, that's just preposterous.
She's trying to sound indignant, but I can hear the tremor in her voice.
I think the police should focus their energy on locating Quinn.
Actually, I say, I don't care what you think, Lori. Expect to be hearing from the police. I hang up the phone and drop it down onto the center of the bed. Back when I was a kid, we used to have a real phone, a landline. And when you were mad at someone, you could slam it down. It's just not the same with a cell phone. As much as I dislike that woman, I don't genuinely think she knows what happened to my sister. She's just a busybody. She's the sort of person who would take pleasure seeing Quinn on trial for what happened to Derek. And she wouldn't be the only one. Derek was eminently likable, as well as rich and powerful. The phone rings again. If it's another one of Derek's mistresses, I swear I'm going to lose it. But when I look over at the screen, I see a name I didn't expect. It's Quinn. Chapter 18. I scoop up the phone, my hands shaking so badly I can barely swipe to answer. Don't hang up, Quinn. I just need to get my fingers working again. Finally, the call connects. I gasp into the phone, Quinn? I expect to hear my sister's high, sweet voice. Instead, I hear a much deeper voice.
Hello?
My breath catches in my throat. It's a man. A man is calling on Quinn's phone. Does that mean he's kidnapped her, and he's going to demand ransom? Who is this? I manage. There's a long pause on the other line.
Who is this?
What is going on here? Why are you on my sister's phone?
I found this phone,
the male voice tells me.
It was in the back of my truck.
I frown, not sure what to make of this development. The back of your truck? What are you talking about?
I was getting something out of my truck and I saw the phone in there, and there were all these missed calls from somebody named Claudia. Is that you?
That's me.
I don't know how the phone got in my truck, but I'd be happy to return it.
He poses an excellent question. How did the phone get in his truck? I spoke with Quinn on the phone, so it was in her possession when we were talking. Shortly after that, I discovered Derek's dead body. At that point, she was no longer answering her phone. So, sometime between our call and when I found Derek, the phone ended up in this guy's car. The real question is this guy on the level? Or is he just messing with me? If I go retrieve the phone from him, will he hit me on the head and try to stuff me in his closet? I'd like to see him try. Unlike Quinn, I'm a fighter.
Who is your sister?
The guy asks. Her name is Quinn.
Wait, Quinn Mackey?
There's a note of surprise and eagerness in his voice. Also, he used our maiden name. I realize at this moment that this man did not do anything terrible to my sister. He's just a guy who found her phone in his truck. That's right, I say. Do you know her?
Yeah. My name is Bill Walsh. She used to babysit for me years ago, and I actually saw her earlier today at a gas station maybe half an hour north of here.
I suck in a breath. You saw her? When?
I'm not sure. Maybe 5 o'clock? I had just finished work.
My heart is pounding. He saw Quinn. He saw her after our phone call. Was she alone?
Seemed to be. She bought a few things at the store. I think she took out some money, then she ran off. She seemed to be in a big hurry.
There was nobody else in the car?
Not that I could see.
I chew on my lower lip. How did she look? Did she look nervous? Scared? Hurt? He thinks about it for a moment.
Now that you mention it, she seemed kind of nervous, but she looked good otherwise. Really good.
Great. This idiot was hitting on my sister.
Is the phone locked?
Yeah, I could only call you because your phone call was on the lock screen.
That means even if I get my hands on the phone, I won't be able to do much with it? Look, I say, I'm going to call the police about the phone. They're going to come pick it up from you.
The police?
Bill Walsh sounds panicked.
But I didn't steal it. I found it in my truck, I swear.
I know. But Quinn is missing. His breath hitches.
You don't think that I
don't. My gut is telling me this guy is just an innocent passerby. Quinn wanted to get rid of her phone so she couldn't be tracked, so she tossed it in his truck. It's what I would have done. I'm proud of her for thinking on her feet. And that means Quinn isn't being held captive somewhere. She left of her own volition. Probably right after she stabbed Derek to death. This changes everything. It means that if the police find Quinn, she's going straight to jail. It means this is a manhunt, not a rescue mission. The right thing to do, the legal thing to do, would be to call Scott Dwyer and tell him this new piece of information. He's in charge of this investigation, and this is a significant piece of evidence. But I don't trust Scott. I don't know what he's going to do when he finds out that Quinn was alive and well and alone right after her husband was stabbed, but it won't be good for Quinn. I can't let that happen. I have to play this right. Well, you could see how this looks, I say. A woman goes missing and you mysteriously have her phone. Doesn't look good for you, Bill.
But I just found it in my truck. He says in a tiny voice, I swear I didn't touch her.
I hope for your sake the police believe that story.
Shit.
I hear him mutter under his breath.
I don't know what to say. I'm a good guy. I'd never hurt a woman. And Christ, my girlfriend would kill me if she thought I...
Look, I say, I believe you. I'm just not sure the police will.
Well, maybe I could give you back the phone and you don't have to tell them.
I glance at the door to the bedroom. Rob is still downstairs. I'd rather he not hear this. Tell you what, Bill. Why don't I come by and get the phone from you? I'll bring it to the police tomorrow and I won't tell them you were involved.
You would do that?
Sure. I can tell from your voice you're an honest man. I just want to find out what happened to my sister.
Me too, he says earnestly. Quinn was a nice girl. She was my favorite babysitter. I hope you find her.
Me too. I'm going to find her. And I'm going to find her before the police do.
So, can you come by tonight?
I glance out the window. The snow is really coming down. If I leave now, Rob will have a fit. He'll want to know where I'm going, and I'll have to have a damn good answer. I'll come first thing in the morning. In the meantime, just power the phone down. If it's off, nobody can track it.
Got it.
I wonder how old Bill Walsh is. He's younger than Quinn, if she babysat for him. Maybe early 20s? He sounds like a kid who will do anything I say. If I say it the right way. I'll come by tomorrow morning, I promise. Just give me your address. Chapter 19. I don't sleep very well. I drift in and out of slumber, dreaming of Quinn. I remember the first time I saw her. Our parents told me I was going to get a new baby sister, and then one day they brought me to the hospital, and there she was. This tiny little scrunched-up newborn lying in my mother's arms. I wanted so badly to hold her, but they wouldn't let me. They said I was too little. Except when both of them were gone, I was the one who took care of Quinn. When I got the call about the accident, I dropped everything. I had exams the next day, but nothing else seemed important anymore. I left school and got a job so we could keep the house. I was all she had, and she was all I had. She should have listened to me about Derek Alexander. I told her he wasn't right for her.
I've made every mistake in the book, so I should know. Obviously, I didn't know this exact thing was going to happen. I didn't know Derek was going to end up dead in the kitchen of their expensive home. But I knew she shouldn't marry him. Well, too late for that now. I wake up at the crack of dawn. It's Saturday, so Rob is sleeping in. He's lying on his side of the bed, his mouth hanging open, a bit of drool sliding out of the left corner of his lips as he snores loudly. My husband snores like a chainsaw. I showed him an article once about that disordered sleep breathing thing where you stop breathing during your sleep, and people who snore loudly are more likely to have it. It means every night you stop breathing in your sleep, Rob, I told him. You really believe that bullshit? He shot back, and he threw the article in the trash. I get dressed as quietly as I can and go downstairs. When I look out the window, our entire driveway is caked in at least a foot of snow. I put on my heaviest winter boots and I take the keys to the truck out of the little basket by the door. My Chevy won't make it, but Rob's rusty green truck will do the trick. Bill Walsh lives only a 15-minute drive from my house. I found his profile last night on Facebook. He's a big guy in his 20s, like I thought, who sports a goofy expression in most of his photos. He looks utterly harmless, and I don't think I'll have much trouble wrangling the phone away from him. I'm sure he'll be happy to hand it over. The roads in our town are still slippery with snow. I haven't called the police station yet today, but I'm guessing they haven't made much progress on finding Quinn. If they found her, I would know. My guess is she's hunkering down somewhere for the night. The question is, where? Bill's house is even smaller than mine and even more badly in need of a coat of paint. I park right in front, and as soon as I get out of the car, my boots sink deep into the snow. I take a good minute to get to his front door. It's like walking through molasses. My coat isn't warm enough for the icy breeze in the air, and I hug my chest as I wait for Bill to answer the door. After only a few moments, the door swings open like he's been waiting for me. The guy towers over me, but there's something young and vulnerable about his face and the scrap of a goatee on his chin.
Claudia,
he says quietly. I nod. You got the phone? He hesitates a moment, then he holds it out to me. Quinn's iPhone. Before he can change his mind, I snatch it out of his hand. It's been powered down, just like I told him. He scratches at his flimsy goatee.
You won't tell the police?
I'll keep my mouth shut.
Thanks.
He shifts his weight.
I want to help find her and all. I really do. But the thing is, I'm on probation right now, so I can't.
I get an uneasy feeling in my stomach. Maybe I shouldn't have been so quick to protect this guy. You're on probation?
Me and my buddy were selling weed.
I look down at the phone in my hand. If I go to the police, I'll be in more trouble than he'll be in. But he doesn't need to know that. Don't worry about it. We'll keep it between us. His shoulders sag.
Thanks. I appreciate it. And I hope you find Quinn. She was awesome.
I lift my eyes to look into his. You swear she seemed okay to you? Not hurt?
Not hurt.
He cocks his head to the side.
But she seemed, it was like something wasn't right. She was nervous about something. In a hurry.
Thanks. I squeeze the phone in my hand. This will be very helpful, and I won't say a word about you to the police. I don't want you to get thrown in jail again. I said that last part just to make sure he keeps his damn mouth shut. I stomp back out to the truck and shut myself inside it before my fingers go numb. I sit for a moment in the driver's seat, staring at the phone that Quinn tried so hard to get rid of. Now I've got to do it for her. Chapter 20. In our small New England town, one thing that never stops, regardless of the weather, is funerals. There's a cemetery about an hour west of home,
the opposite direction of where Quinn was headed. It's a cemetery I know very well, because it's where our parents are buried. They died when I was 18 and Quinn was 14. A car accident took them both. They were driving to the high school to see a school play that Quinn was starring in. They spun out of control on the snowy road and collided with a tractor trailer. They were both killed instantly. Unfortunately, money was tight before the accident, and they let their insurance policy lapse. So Quinn and I were left with nothing. It was a no-brainer to quit college. I couldn't pay for school anymore anyway, and I couldn't let Quinn be sent to live with distant relatives, or worse, end up in foster care with strangers. From then on, it was just me and Quinn against the world. I looked out for her, made sure she studied for her exams, hung out with the right kids, and vetted her rare boyfriends. Too bad she didn't listen to me about the man she married. I hardly ever think about our parents anymore. It's been an eternity since they died. I can't even imagine the sound of my mother's voice anymore. I forget whether my father had a beard or not. It feels like I knew them in another lifetime. But I still come here sometimes. I bring flowers. But that's not why I'm here today. Sure enough, when I arrive at the cemetery, there's a funeral going on despite the snow. The funeral procession is parked along the side of the road, and the mourners are gathered around the gravestone. They're bundled up in heavy coats and hats as they say goodbye to their loved one a final time. I sit in my car for a moment, then I power up Quinn's phone. I see the little Apple logo appear on the screen, and a second later, the phone prompts me to enter a passcode. What would Quinn choose as her passcode? Her birthday? I try it, but no luck. My birthday? That doesn't work either. My own phone buzzes. It's Rob texting me. Where did you go with my truck? I don't answer. Instead, I type in Derek's birthday. And now I'm locked out. It doesn't matter. I didn't come here to get into Quinn's phone. I came here to get rid of it. My phone buzzes again. I don't even look at it. I'm sure it's Rob. I walk along the row of parked cars. Most of them are locked up tight, but a couple have their windows cracked open. I come to a stop when I see a car with Vermont license plates. The back window is cracked open just a hair. Just enough for me to slide Quinn's phone in. There. Let's see Scott Tracker down now. I look back up at the cemetery. I haven't been here for at least a year. At first, Quinn and I used to come here every month. I would drive us, and we would stand together in front of their headstones, holding hands. Quinn would usually cry. She blamed herself. After all, they had been going to see her play. If only I hadn't tried out for that stupid play, she would sob. After a while, we started going every other month. Then every few months. Then once a year. Well, I guess that means it's time for a visit. I step through the iron gates to get into the cemetery. The snow is mostly untouched in here. It's thick and flawlessly white. My legs sink almost to my knees as I walk over to our parents' gravestones. They're all the way in the back. Maxine Turner Mackey and Samuel Mackey, beloved wife and husband, parents to Quinn and Claudia. Sometimes I imagine what our lives would have been like if they hadn't died. I would have completed college. Maybe I would be a lawyer right now like I wanted. I would have made smarter choices in my life if I knew I had my parents backing me up. I doubt I would have married Rob. Maybe Quinn would have made better choices, too. Well, there's no point in debating what would have happened. They're dead, and there's nothing anyone can do about it. Chapter 21. When I get back home, Rob is waiting for me in the kitchen.
He's eating a bowl of cereal, and he glares at me as I stomp the snow off my boots in the foyer, silently daring him to come yell at me. He doesn't.
Where were you?
He asks as I walk into the living room in my bare feet. Just driving around, looking for Quinn. He grunts.
You think you could find her better than the police?
That's the problem with Rob. He never believes in me. A few years ago, I talked to him about the possibility of going back to college, or at least taking a few classes.
You're way too old for that, Claudia.
I hate to admit it, but his words got to me. I never ended up doing it. Maybe, I say.
Well, did you?
I roll my eyes. No, I didn't. He frowns.
You be careful, Claudia. You know, if you help her, you'll be aiding and abetting a criminal.
Quinn isn't a criminal.
She killed her husband. I would say that makes her a criminal.
Watch it. Our eyes meet across the table. I see a muscle twitch in Rob's jaw. Finally, he drops his eyes.
If you're going to take my truck,
he mutters,
at least let me know first.
I wasn't gone long.
Yeah, but I got a job to do, Claudia.
I snort. What, unclogging someone's toilet? He stands up so quickly he nearly knocks his chair down.
Guess that's not as important as giving somebody a back rub, huh?
I open my mouth to reply, but Rob has already brushed past me. He grabs his coat and his car keys, then he's out the door. The entire house shakes on its foundation when he slams the door shut. I don't expect to go out again today anyway. I got rid of the phone. Presumably, the phone is currently making its way to Vermont. Nowhere near us. By the time the police track it down, Quinn will have had time to get even further away from here. And when she calls to tell me where she is, and I'm sure she will, I'm going to be ready. I had a couple of massage clients scheduled in the afternoon, but everyone canceled because of the snow. It means I end up sitting around the house, worrying about what's happening with my sister. I also do a bit of laundry. Rob never, ever does laundry. He would keep buying underwear for months to avoid doing a load. I call the police station and leave a message for Scott, but I don't get a call back until nearly 5 o'clock in the afternoon while I'm sitting on my sofa watching television to take my mind off everything. Rob got called out on a job and he took his truck with him. Did you find her? I ask Scott before he can get a word in. His voice is gruff.
Not yet.
I allow my shoulders to relax. Of course they didn't find her. This guy is a small-town police deputy for a reason. He doesn't know how to investigate a murder. He has no idea how to find a person on the run. Maybe if the chief were here, they would have a chance.
But it's just a matter of time,
he adds. There's an ominous tone to his voice. What do you mean?
I mean, we've got some leads.
Did you find her phone? Scott hesitates.
We tracked it to Vermont, and I've got an officer going over there. But we have reason to believe she's still in the state. I don't think she's gone far.
I get a queasy feeling in my stomach. I thought dumping that cell phone in the car at the cemetery would send Scott on a wild goose chase that would give my sister at least another day of leeway. But it turns out he's smarter than I gave him credit for. Why do you say that? I ask carefully.
We found out she got pulled over last night on I-93 North, just before the state line. They didn't issue a ticket or anything like that, but she had a blown-out taillight. The officer told her she had to get off the road, and he said he didn't see her again, so he assumed she did.
Oh, Quinn, how could you be so stupid? I chew on my thumbnail. But that was last night. She could be hundreds of miles away by now.
Maybe. But there was a blizzard going on, and she was in a compact car. She probably had to get off the road anyway, even without the taillight issue. And wherever she pulled over, she may very well be stuck. Anyway, we're checking it out.
I cringe. If she's still in New Hampshire, they'll find her soon. How did she not even manage to make it out of the state? I can get out of the state in less than 2 hours. Of course, in the weather we were having last night, without all-wheel drive or snow tires, she would have had to go pretty slowly. Still. Scott, I say, you don't think Quinn killed her husband, do you? There's a long silence on the other line.
I'm not sure what to think right now, but it isn't looking good for her, Claudia. She left him lying dead in her house, and there was nobody else in the car with her when she got pulled over. It's not like somebody was holding a gun to her head.
I clench my right hand into a fist. You know her, though. You know she wouldn't do something like this.
I don't know her.
I'm surprised how cold Scott's voice sounds. He dated Quinn. He was so infatuated with her, I could see it all over his face. And when she moved back here, I ran into him on the street, and he started asking me all kinds of questions about her. What are you talking about? I say. She was your girlfriend.
We dated for a few months, 10 years ago.
She was your girlfriend. I know you cared about her a lot.
That was a very long time ago.
He pauses.
We were just kids then. It was nothing. I don't know her anymore. You know she keeps to herself.
He's not wrong about that. Derek and Quinn almost never entertained guests. My sister used to be outgoing, but after she got married, she turned into a hermit. Scott lets out a sigh.
Claudia, I have to go. If you hear anything from Quinn, let me know right away.
Will you tell me if you think you know where she is?
Yes.
But he hesitates for several seconds before answering, which makes me think he has absolutely no intention of telling me anything. Why should he? He doesn't want me to tip her off, after all. Deputy Dwyer may be a better police officer than I gave him credit for, although I still can't believe he didn't go into her house yesterday after he got the call about the screams. After I hang up with Scott, I can't stop pacing across the living room. I was trying to give my sister a clear shot to escape the police, figuring she would contact me when they stopped looking for her, but it's not working. How did she manage to get herself pulled over? What was she doing with a blown-out taillight anyway? That's when I make a split-second decision. I'm going to look for her. This is New England. The main roads will be clear by now. I need to find her before the police do. I have a sense of where they pulled her over, and I know Quinn better than anyone in the world. I'm going to find my sister. Chapter 22. It's dark by the time I get on the road. Fortunately, the snow has been cleared from the streets, so the tires don't slip too badly. I can only imagine Quinn taking this route last night, when the snow was really coming down. She didn't have a chance. I merge onto the highway and start driving north. I filled up my tank in anticipation of the storm, so I've got enough gas to get me well across state lines. But I don't think I'll need to go that far. Only a day earlier, Quinn took this exact route in her attempt to escape. I imagine her, gripping the steering wheel, her eyes pinned down the road. I'm the one who taught Quinn to drive. She was very responsible about it. She would sit in the driver's seat, holding the wheel carefully in the 9 and 3 positions, her shoulders stiff as a board. She passed the driving test on her first try, and the first thing she did was hug me. I can find her. I know I can. About an hour after I get on the road, my phone rings. I rifle around in my purse, searching for it with my fingers, but the first thing they come in contact with is the pocket knife. It's Rob's knife, which he uses when he goes fishing, but I borrowed it. I thought it would be a good idea to have a little protection handy, just in case. My fingers finally locate my phone. I pull it out of my purse without taking my eyes off the road. I glance down at the name on the screen. It's the police station. I put the phone on speaker and drop it into the cup holder. Hello? I say.
Claudia? It's Deputy Dwyer.
Hi, Scotty. There's a pause in the other line. I wonder if I finally got to him by using his old nickname.
Listen, Claudia, where are you?
I freeze. I'm at home.
No, you're not. I was just at your house and your husband told me you weren't home. He said he hasn't seen you since the morning and didn't know where you are.
Oh.
Have you spoken to your husband recently?
No, I don't generally get his permission when I leave the house. Scott ignores my jab.
So where are you then?
There's no way I can tell him where I really am. I just stepped out for a bit. To the grocery store.
I see.
He doesn't sound like he believes me, but what can he do? Arrest me for not being home?
I'd be happy to meet you wherever you are. I'd like to speak to you.
A shiver runs down my spine. About what? Another silence on the other line.
I'd rather talk in person. Where are you?
I press my foot down on the gas, my head whipping back as the car accelerates. Did you find Quinn?
No, not yet.
I don't understand why he wants to speak to me so badly. And I don't like the idea of meeting him somewhere that isn't the police station. Not for the first time since I discovered my brother-in-law's dead body. I don't entirely trust Deputy Scott Dwyer.
Claudia.
I'll let you know when I get home from the grocery store, I say. Before he can say another word, I hang up the phone. There's an uneasy feeling in the pit of my stomach. What does Scott want to talk to me about? What was such a secret that he couldn't tell me about it on the phone? It doesn't matter, though. I'm not turning around and heading back home. I've come this far. I'm going to keep pushing forward. An hour later, I'm getting close to the end of New Hampshire. This is where Quinn must have been when the police officer pulled her over for the broken taillight. I keep my eyes peeled for any area she might have pulled her car into. Now that the sun is down, any liquid left on the road is starting to freeze. I have to slow down to keep my wheels from slipping. There's no way she could have gone much further than this in a snowstorm. And that's when I see it. The tiny, faded sign that I almost miss, but just barely catch. Baxter Motel. I don't know why, but my gut is telling me this is where Quinn ended up. She would have been looking for something small and out of the way, and this is around where she got pulled over, so she knew she had to get off the road. As I turn off a highway, following an equally faded sign pointing in the direction of the hotel, I pass a police car going in the opposite direction. It looks like they had the same idea I did. I slow down as much as I can and catch a glimpse of the back seat of the car. It's empty. So they didn't find Quinn at the Baxter Motel. I pull over on the side of the road, debating what to do next. The police obviously searched the motel and didn't find her there. Am I wasting my time? But I still have that feeling. I think she would have stopped here. I'm going to check it out. Chapter 23. The Baxter Motel is about what I might have expected from an out-of-the-way motel at a nearly non-existent rest stop. It's decrepit, with the sign peeling and almost rotting, abutted by an equally decrepit house and what looks like it used to be a restaurant, now abandoned. If Quinn wanted a place to sleep for the night and didn't want to sleep in her freezing car, this would be a perfect place to hide out. The light is on in the motel's lobby. I step inside, and the first thing I see is a bucket in the center of the room with water leaking down into it from the ceiling. There's a desk at the far end, and a man is sitting at a desk, looking down at his phone.
But when he sees me walk in, he sits up rigidly. I approach the desk tentatively. The guy sitting at the desk reminds me of the boys Quinn used to date in high school and college. He has those boy-next-door type of good looks, like Scott Dwyer. That was her type, much more so than classically handsome Derek. I was always surprised she fell for Derek. The man doesn't return my smile. His brown eyes are wary as they rake over me. I wonder if he recognizes me. People say Quinn and I have a resemblance, although less so since she started dyeing her hair.
Yes, he says.
He looks suspicious of me, and I haven't even opened my mouth. Right off the bat, I sense I won't get much out of this guy. I have to try something else. Do you have any rooms for the night? I ask. He narrows his eyes at me.
A room?
I blink at him. This is a motel, isn't it? He looks at me for a long time, and he nods.
Yes. It's $50 a night.
Cash okay?
Yeah, fine.
He stands there, waiting while I fish around in my purse for my wallet. I pull out a 20, two tens, and a five. I've got another $3 bills, and now I'm counting change out.
Fine,
he says after I've counted out almost a dollar in change.
That'll do.
I let out a breath. I thought he was going to turn me away for being 50 cents short. Thanks.
I have to go change the sheets on the bed.
He reaches under the table and pulls out a yellowing sheet of paper.
I need you to fill this out for me.
It's the standard information sheet. Name, contact information, address. I'll have to make it all up. The man ambles off, presumably to change the sheets on the bed, even though it's unnecessary. I'm not going to spend the night here. I'm only going to stay long enough to get the information I need. I make up a fake name and scribble in some fake address in my most illegible handwriting. My name is Melissa Smith, and I live in Jefferson, New Hampshire. While I'm waiting for the man to return, I get out my cell phone. There's another missed call from the police station. I don't call Scott back. Not now, anyway. Maybe after I get back home. Idly, I type into the search engine on my phone. Baxter Motel, New Hampshire. I didn't expect to get any hits. Maybe a Facebook page with a link to a website under construction. But instead, my entire screen fills with stories about the Baxter Motel. And the one word present in every single result is murder. My heart jumps in my chest.
All set, ma'am.
I jerk my eyes up from my phone screen. That man is standing in front of me, even though I didn't see him come back downstairs. I shove my phone back in my purse. Part of me wants to ask him if he knows that every single mention of his hotel on the internet has the word murder in it. I have a feeling he does. I swallow. Thanks. He grabs the sheet of paper that I just got done filling out. He scans my details and rolls his eyes. What? I say.
Nothing.
You just rolled your eyes. He puts down the piece of paper on the desk.
You really want to have this conversation?
What conversation?
Your information is fake.
He shrugs.
It's fine.
I fold my arms across my chest. What makes you so sure of that?
I used to live in Jefferson. You got the zip code wrong, way off.
I open my mouth, not sure how to respond to that.
I said it's fine.
He waves to indicate I should